My name is Sarah Bohannon, and I'll be one of your hosts of this NSPR news special on affordable housing in the North State. Capital Public Radio recently created a special called Place and Privilege. It was an hour-long look at the current housing crisis in our state's capital, told through the voices of some of Sacramento's most vulnerable. A single mother sent to find a new place to rent in a sky-high market, a man who received permanent housing after once being homeless, a woman who receives housing assistance but was almost unable to find a place to rent even with her voucher in hand. According to Capital Public Radio's reporting, in 2016, rents in Sacramento were the fastest rising in the nation. At that time, the city also had a projected rental vacancy rate of less than 3%. These types of statistics and the voices we heard on this special made us at NSPR wonder what the housing landscape looks like farther north. Are we seeing similar trends in our own backyard? Do you who live in the North State have similar stories? The answer is yes, you do. While the reasons are somewhat different from the housing crisis in Sacramento, the fact that there is an affordable housing shortage in the North State is very much the same. Through the reporting of our news team, you'll hear about the current state of our region's housing market, from people whose rent costs them most of what they bring home on their paycheck, from students who have struggled to find housing while they attend Chico State, from a once homeless veteran who now has a stable roof over her head, and from the wife of a farm worker who this holiday season had a place that she and her family could call their own.
Lacking lures found elsewhere, the North State has long viewed itself as distinct, a sort of under-the-radar California. Sure, our surf breaks are behind boats, and we lack movie moguls and high-tech business parks, but we're not choking on traffic, and most are winning the struggle to keep a roof over their head, though some of that may be changing. After a wave of real estate speculation crested, then crashed into reality a decade ago, home prices across the North State have largely recovered their pre-cash peaks in recent months. Mostly, these quick rising home prices are a boon to those who bought earlier, and economists say they boost confidence, but they're also a double-edged sword, and some of the growing pains are starting to hurt. On a recent Saturday, Ricky Lee Barouche was making the rounds of open houses. So far, she's a bit underwhelmed.
I feel like I have a really good job, but I can only afford a house that's, you know, that isn't going to be able to give me what I need, if that makes sense.
With a job in Gridley, a husband in law school, three children, and two big dogs, Barouche may have to revise her wish list.
We really would like to have a four-bedroom house, and that's hard to find in Chico. It's very important to my husband to not live in cookie-cutter houses, and he wants, you know, an area with established trees and uniqueness. So finding a four-bedroom in our price range in a neighborhood we like that fits that criteria has been very difficult. But we're still looking and hoping and hoping something will come up, but you know, we're just average people and we don't have $500,000 for a house, so just trying to find something that works for us.
A bedroom shy of ideal for Barouche, the 1,500 square foot early 60s home she toured is offered at $285,000. That's less than the median priced home bought in Chico in October, but more than the median for Butte County as a whole. The median-priced home means that half of the homes sold for more and half for less. It's considered more accurate than an average price, which can be skewed by a small number of very pricey or very inexpensive homes. Several years ago, that $285,000 price tag Barouche was looking at would have bought more house. There are plenty of reasons fueling a rise in the region's home prices. The broader economy is growing at a good clip, more people are working, and mortgage rates continue scraping all-time lows. Experts also point to another trend. Insane Bay Area real estate prices have been pushing businesses and home buyers eastward for decades. Nearly continuous strings of suburbs now line major highways from San Francisco to Stockton and Sacramento. Yanni Kazanis is a spokesman for the North State Builders Association, the local branch of a national trade group for home builders.
A lot of people are looking at Sacramento and saying, you know what, I can get more bang for my buck in Sacramento, so I could sell perhaps the, you know, smaller home that I live in the Bay Area and come and get something a little bigger with some land attached to it in Sacramento.
That's having a knock-on effect, pricing more modestly paid families out of Sacramento and its established suburbs like Folsom, Roseville, and Elk Grove. Some of those people are now looking north. While so-called green lines prevent homes from sprouting up in northern Sacramento County, development is leapfrogging. In southern Yuba County, an entirely new town, Plumas Lake, has been conjured in recent years as if from nothing. And the demand for affordable housing is reaching even farther north. Leslie Swainer, a longtime realtor in Willows, says that the last two homes she sold were to young couples planning on commuting to Sacramento. She said traffic is so bad in the capital region that a friend sold in Sacramento County bought and moved to more affordable Colusa without increasing their commute time. And Sacramento isn't the only commuter destination for people buying in the North State. She says a good number of buyers in Glenn County, particularly in Hamilton City and Orland, commute to Chico for work. Jordan Levine is an economist with the California Association of Realtors. He says the rising prices of homes come with a cost.
The price growth of double digits in some of these markets is great for those folks who already own homes and own property in those areas, but unfortunately wages are growing nowhere near double digits. And so, again, folks who haven't got their foot on the property ladder continue to fall farther and farther behind the eight ball, if you will.
Meanwhile, some people who've done well betting on California real estate as an investment see opportunity in the North State.
Folks who do live in some of these very high-priced markets look at prices in places like Chico and up in Shasta and say things are very affordable. And so what happens is you get those high-income earners who come in and also push up prices in the local market.
But a rising tide can only lift boats so far. Data from the California Association of Realtors suggests something of a split in terms of real estate prices. 2 years ago, the median sales price of existing homes sold in Shasta and Butte counties, the most populous counties in the North State, were just over $1,000 apart. Last month, Shasta's median was $250,000, rising almost 6% over 2 years. In Butte County, the median surged 34% over the same period. Double-digit annual increases also occurred in Nevada and Plumas counties.
I think you're seeing some of that two-step there, where you're getting some folks being priced out into places that used to be more outlying areas or bedroom, quote-unquote bedroom communities, and those folks who used to live in those bedroom communities are finding themselves being priced out to even farther and farther away.
Though prices appear paramount in terms of affordability, they're only one piece of the puzzle. Supply and demand, interest rates, and incomes are just as important. Builders blame cities and counties for crimping construction, saying impact fees and regulations add delays and costs. Local governments counter, saying they're required to identify sites for enough new housing to accommodate growth, and in turn point to risk-averse bankers and other market forces. Interest rates are often hugely important for individual buyers. Along with the size of a down payment, they determine whether a home is affordable. Say, for example, you had $50,000 available to put 20% down on a $250,000 median-priced home in Shasta County. You still have to borrow $200,000. At current rates, a bit below 4%, the monthly payment for principal and interest, along with a ballpark figure for property taxes and home insurance, and your monthly is just shy of $1,250. But if mortgage rates were closer to where they were 15 years ago, 7%, you'd be looking at nearly $400 more, or $1,630 a month. Historically, 7% was considered a great interest rate for 30-year mortgages, the most common type, but rates have been well below 7% for more than a decade now. Again, those lower rates mean smaller monthly payments on the same amount of borrowed money. While that makes housing more affordable, it also fuels speculation, which can drive up prices if enough people jump on the bandwagon. A certain amount of that happened in Chico recently as housing prices and interest rates bottomed out. Opportunities for investors remain, but Randy Young, a realtor with Anderson Real Estate Sales, said their strategies have changed.
I'm not seeing a lot of flipped houses as much anymore because you're not getting those sweet deals where they can, buy one of these type houses at $175,000, put $80,000 into it, and then sell for close to three. If you want to buy a property, you can still turn it into a profitable rental.
Income is, of course, the other main component, and it's one of the big hurdles the North State faces in terms of affordability. Built on logging, mining, and farming, recent decades have been tough on the regional economy. Easily extracted resources are mostly gone. Environmental regulations have placed limitations, while mechanization and automation mean more work is handled by fewer hands. Ryan Miller is a project manager at the Center for Economic Development and an instructor at the Department of Geography and Planning at CSU Chico.
We're still looking at kind of the decline of manufacturing, the decline of a lot of the natural resource jobs that might have been contributing to these higher incomes back in the 90s or early 2000s. And if you look at the main really drivers of the economy today, it's healthcare and education, which tend to be fairly stable. So while there are some higher income jobs in the North State, it's not, you know, outside of healthcare, these aren't really growing industries.
While the median household income across the nation is over $55,000, in California as a whole, it's close to $64,000. In the North State, median household incomes range from a high of almost $55,000 in Colusa down to just over $35,000 in Trinity County. When purchasing a house, financial planners routinely suggest limiting your housing costs to under 30% of your income, ideally around a quarter. Spending much more than that can leave you financially vulnerable should you suffer an illness, layoff, or even an expensive car repair. That guideline is also well known by financial institutions, which is why your credit card has a limit and why mortgage lenders demand so many documents and typically limit what they're willing to lend out. But wages locally are lagging the state and nation as a whole, meaning cobbling together a down payment large enough to avoid getting stuck with a higher interest rate, private mortgage insurance, or resorting to a risky adjustable rate loan is an obstacle for many would-be buyers, as is reaching that suggested 30% income threshold. With home prices mostly on the rise, wages generally stagnant, and interest rates having nowhere to go but up, housing affordability is likely to continue being an issue throughout the North State. Mark Albert, North State Public Radio News.
While special loan programs may help some who are struggling to purchase a home, most people rent when they find buying a home out of financial reach. That puts upward pressure on rental prices as more people compete for a mainly static number of rentals in the region. According to housing officials, both Redding and Chico have rental vacancy rates of about 1%, meaning it's a tough market for renters out there. And as rents rise but wages stay stagnant, a larger and larger percent of a person's paycheck is going toward their monthly rent. That leaves fewer and fewer dollars left for basic comforts, and sometimes even basic needs, placing a burden on many who are trying to make ends meet.
According to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, a household is defined as rent-burdened when tenants pay more than 30% of their gross income on rent. And across California, it's pretty common. Data collected in 2016 by the U.S. Census Bureau showed a little over half of the households across California were experiencing rent burden, and 29% were experiencing severe rent burden, which means that they were paying more than half of their income on rent. Sarah Kimberlin is the senior policy analyst at the California Budget and Policy Center. She says the amount of people facing rent burden is on the rise.
The key issue in California basically is that rents have been going up much faster than incomes have been going up, in particular faster than renter incomes have been going up.
Kimberlin says from 2001 to 2015, median rents went up by 18%. What those renters were bringing home on their paychecks, however, did not keep up.
In terms of an inflation-adjusted increase, there was no growth in median renter incomes during that time.
While there's no doubt that rent prices are soaring in California's coastal areas and major cities like San Francisco and Los Angeles, that doesn't necessarily mean that those are the places where people are experiencing the most rent burden. In fact, rent burden is very prevalent in many rural areas of California, including the North State.
If you look at the share of households who are housing cost burden in that part of the state, specifically Butte County and Shasta County, the share of households paying more than 30% of income towards rent is definitely above average relative to California statewide.
Butte and Shasta counties are actually among the highest in the state when it comes to rent burden. Combining data collected in 2014 and 2015, the California Budget and Policy Center reported that in Shasta County, 55% of renter households were experiencing rent burden. In Butte County, it was 61%. Again, compared to California's larger metropolitan areas, rent in the North State is considerably cheap, So it might seem odd to hear that Butte and Shasta counties have so many people who are struggling with rent. But that's because rent burden isn't necessarily an issue of the price of rent, as much as it's an issue about the price of that rent relative to their incomes. In the far north region of California, between 2006 and 2016, the percent change in median household rent has gone up by about 2%, but the median renter household income has gone down by a staggering 16%.
Earnings and workers' incomes are just not increasing as fast as the cost of living. You know, that's what causes families to struggle to cover the basic cost of housing.
To get a better idea of how people here in the North State are impacted by rent burden, we interviewed several customers at Winco in Chico and Food Max in Oroville. We asked those who said they did pay at least 30% of their income on rent how being rent burdened affects their lives.
Well, the first thing of all is you got to have a roof over your head. You've got to have your utilities. You've got to have food. The rest of the stuff, the clothes, are dirt cheap to go to a thrift store. Food you can really economize on quite a bit, but you cut out like cable. We can't afford cable. Gym memberships, nails done? Are you kidding? You cut out a lot of stuff. You have to have shelter. Too old to be homeless.
Yes, I am experiencing that because I'm a student at Chico State, and all I get is like government assistance, and I spent about half of the amount I get in rent.
It means I don't have freedom to do a lot of things I would like to do, but I can still go to school and raise kids.
I mean, it's a worry every month. You know, you pay at the beginning of the month, by the end of the month, you're stressed about how you're going to pay it again. It's a never-ending cycle.
It makes it hard to keep up with regular bills and, like, repairs that your kids may do because you're spending so much on just the rent and what you need to keep it going. It's hard to keep it nice.
Definitely cut down on things that we don't necessarily need, like what do we cut down on? Clothes, entertainment for sure. That's about it, yeah.
So I take advantages of utility reductions because I receive food stamps for my two children, so, and food banks to make my food stamps last longer. And, you know, in Southern California, I had a lot more options than in Northern California. There's not as much assistance up here as there is down there. So stressful, years off my life. I mean, stress kills. And so, you know, financial stress is the biggest one. So especially being a single mom and, you know, working and going to school full time, it's more stress that I don't need.
Needs and wants. You got to separate the two. It's made me have to take jobs that were physically detrimental to my body. I worked in construction and equipment and concrete my whole life, so I've had to work in a way that, you know, wore me out sooner than I'd wanted to.
So I pay $850 for a three-bedroom house, and it's not, I only get $475, and it's, I gotta split the rent, and it's really hard to make three times the income and barely get by. But rent is a lot. It's a big issue here in Oroville, especially because a lot of low-income housing is expensive. Oh, Lord, I would say you got to buy food cheap. You got to go cheap with the food, and you got to keep your bills. Sometimes you got to do monthly payments, you know, got to cut down on a phone bill or something, or like contracts so you can pay. And it's kind of hard because you always got to find that extra money to get by every month. And it's a struggle. It really is a struggle, and it's sad.
We also spoke with a Chico State student named Dan, who asked that only his first name be used for this story. Dan's primary source of income is through the Supplemental Security Income Program. SSI is a government program aiding people with low income who are over 65 or have a disability. It provides him $895 a month, of which he pays $460 on rent.
I feel like in some ways I'm not able to afford basic, like commodities in a way. Like with food, I've had a habit even before where I just went and ate at food banks, you know, whatever they gave me and some stuff. And whatever little money I do have, I can set aside to save up for stuff like, you know, your basic chicken and pork chops and whatnot. You know, if I get like a box of mac and cheese, say, oh, okay, I can save that. And if they give me a little veggie thing, I can use that too and go out and buy some kind of main dish. And I can scale back a little bit on that because a lot of price is going up here. You know, I hardly ever eat out anymore. I do eat something, or I try and find other ways of making it through because it's not easy.
Some say there are solutions to the growing problem of rent burden. Again, Sarah Kimberlin.
One approach is to just try to increase the availability of housing in general and affordable housing specifically. And the California State Legislature in the most recent legislative session passed a number of bills that are intended to try to address that issue by trying to facilitate more production of housing in all parts of California and also trying to specifically support more production of housing that's affordable to households that have lower incomes. I mean, that's definitely a step in the right direction.
Kimberlin added that many of the decisions regarding how much housing to build and where to build it happen at the local level. For NSPR News, I'm Nolan Ford.
The struggle to pay for food and rent that many students like Dan face is one that seems to have flown under the radar until recently. A 2016 report commissioned by California State University Chancellor Timothy White shed light on the fact that in the 23-campus CSU system, one in five students suffer from food insecurity and one in 10 live in unstable housing situations, impacting everything from a student's academic performance to their likelihood to graduate to their general well-being.
For Chico State students on a budget, affordable housing exists, but it often comes with other costs. Finding a cheap place to rent often means having more roommates than you'd prefer, signing a fixed-term lease, or living in a location that isn't ideal. Take Jessica, for example. She asked us to use a pseudonym because she's worried her landlord will hear this story. She's a young mother who looks to be in her mid-20s. She's raising a 4-year-old while getting her college degree and currently lives in an off-campus apartment on Nord Avenue in Chico. Jessica says it's not the neighborhood she would like to live in, but it's what she can currently afford.
There's a lot of crimes reported in my neighborhood, and like I won't walk. I've seen cars get stolen, like with my own two eyes.
Jessica just qualified for the Housing Choice Voucher Program, formerly known as Section 8 Housing. She's currently on a waiting list. Getting one of the vouchers would mean she'd pay only a certain amount of her monthly income for rent, with the federal government picking up the rest. With the voucher, she says she could afford a nicer place, in a better area.
I mean, it'll take a while to do that, but you get more choice in where you want to live with that.
For other students at Chico State, roommates are the answer to finding an affordable house, but they can cause other kinds of financial strain. Take Nadine Salas, for example. When she decided to move off campus her sophomore year, she said she underestimated the amount of time it would take to find a place. Students will typically begin looking for a house in December for fall of the following year, but she didn't start looking until April. She happened to find a friend whose roommate had dropped out last minute.
My sophomore year was the worst year I've had with housing ever. So found a friend who got an apartment. They all signed the lease, but then two of the girls decided that they no longer wanted to go to Chico right before the beginning of the next semester. So they dropped out, but they needed people to replace their lease. So I came in saying, of course, I need somewhere to live.
The two girls each found someone to fill their place, but one of the people they found couldn't qualify. His family was undocumented, so he didn't have anyone to co-sign on the lease. Nadine was desperate to find someone to fill the room and asked her mom to co-sign for him, even though she had only known him for a month. Not long after, he decided he didn't like Chico and went back to live with his parents. Since this roommate wasn't responsible for his lease, he didn't bother to replace the room. In the end, Nadine's family ended up paying for his rent.
So when you can't pay for it and you're living in an apartment, not one person gets evicted. It doesn't work that way. If one person isn't paying their half of the rent, the entire unit gets evicted, regardless if I'm paying my side. And so we knew that, and I knew that for him too. Even if my mother wasn't co-signing for him, if there was nobody paying his side of the rent, the entire place would get evicted. And then what would happen?
Dan Herbert is the director of off-campus student services. He says this is a common problem with students who often feel monetary pressure to enter into lease agreements with people they may not know very well.
I've seen students that have walked away with a $5,000 bill at the end of the school year and just totally flabbergasted by the fact that they would have to pay for a damage that their roommate had incurred.
The demographics of Chico State are also changing. Herbert says there are more students who can't qualify for an apartment on their own and whose parents aren't able to co-sign for them.
I mean, it's pretty incredible to think that when I was here 40 years ago, it was a pretty middle-class student would come to campus with mom and dad's 5 or 6 year old car and pretty much have their means, at least the vast majority. And now, you know, we're seeing 35% of our students who are coming here and having food insecurity and a good percentage of them having housing insecurities.
It's Herbert's job to help students find solutions to these kinds of problems. He says when a student doesn't qualify for an apartment, he can often call the landlord directly and they can come up with an answer together. For example, a high grade point average could substitute for a lack of a rental history.
Probably the biggest influx of students that come to my office are first generation students, often low income students, and looking for solutions that they just don't, they can't find on their own. And what I have found is I've reached out to property owners and discussed the challenges. Property owners are becoming more and more understanding of the demographic of our Chico State student.
Andres, who asked us not to use his real name, is the first in his family to go to college. He says he couldn't afford to live in the dorms his freshman year and had to find a place in Chico from his home in Los Angeles. He says he spent the whole summer searching.
Financial aid, everything was set, classes were set, but it was literally like, if I don't get a place, I'm not going to Chico. Like, simple as that.
But just before the start of the semester, Andres got an email from the engineering department, his major at the time. The email basically said that the school recognized he hadn't signed up for the dorms. It provided all the resources he needed to find an apartment. It said,
"We see you don't have a housing place yet. Here are 3 other students that are in your same situation. Here's a list of a few apartments that are focused on like student housing and stuff like off campus. You know, figure it out."
Because of that email, Andres did figure it out. He says the help was a huge relief. This year, Dan Herbert started a new program to help expand the services offered to students. Property owners can now pay a fee to get onto a list of university-recommended housing. The fee is put into a pool for grants that provide emergency funds for students with housing needs. It's a win-win. Property owners get to advertise their units through the university, and the university raises money for students who can't afford to rent. So far, the school has raised around $40,000 through this program. But Herbert says they haven't needed to give out a single grant yet. He says it could be because not everyone knows about the program, or his department is usually all students need.
So far, the people we've helped haven't needed the money, the financial grants. We've been able to find other creative solutions.
As for Nadine, Andres, and Jessica, Nadine and Andres both say they love their current apartments. Jessica is still waiting for her Section 8 housing choice voucher, which, for some, can take years to get. I'm Adia White for North State Public Radio.
You're listening to an NSPR news special. We'll be right back to hear more about affordable housing in the North State right after this break.
Hi, this is Adia White of the NSPR news team. This special on affordable housing that you're listening to is the first long-form project like this that we've done. But we'd like to create more. That is, if you would like to hear this type of reporting. That's why we're asking you to let us know what you think about this special and to tell us what issues you'd like us to dig into next. Email us at nsprnews@csuchico.edu. That's nsprnews@csuchico.edu. Or give us a call at 433-4887. That's 433-4887.
We're back from a break to hear more about affordable housing in the North State. I'm Nolan Ford, one of your hosts of this NSPR news special. According to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, 7 out of 10 low-income American households pay too much for rent and do not receive federal assistance to help them with their housing. While there are many federal programs that provide various types of rental assistance to those who need it, the largest is the Housing Choice Voucher Program, formerly known as Section 8. The program is run by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD. According to the HUD website, the program provides more than 2 million low-income households with rent assistance vouchers to help them afford decent, safe, and sanitary private market housing.
But this is such a peaceful place, any time that there's sun. You know, it's not that much fun when it's like gloomy and dark and everything. This is my broccoli. This was given to me by the vets.
No longer working and a part of what she calls the movers and shakers of society, Melissa Reed says she's been putting a lot of her focus on plants. It's obvious by her back porch. In it stands a makeshift greenhouse Reed created out of 2x4s and a sheet of plastic to protect her potted plants over the winter. She says she spends a lot of time in her community garden where, in her plot, she just planted beans and cactus. Lately, she says she's also been experimenting with curing olives she's been collecting from a small row of olive trees that stand in the front of Turning Point Commons, the affordable housing complex in Chico where she lives. But before Reed spent so much time planting and gathering, she was one of those movers and shakers. Reed says she got a degree from Chico State in liberal arts, and after getting a teaching credential, became a substitute teacher who taught in schools all over the North State. She says later she became a licensed vocational nurse, and before that, she was an aircraft mechanic in the Air Force.
I was in for almost 8 years, and I served in Korea and Turkey and all over the United States.
It's this military service that led Reed to the plants and trees she tends. Reed is a participant of the Veterans Affairs Supportive Housing Program, also known as the HUD-VASH program. It's a collaborative program funded through the Department of Veterans Affairs and the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. The VA part of the partnership provides Reed with case management and clinical services, and HUD provides her with a type of rental assistance called a housing choice voucher. It ensures that Reed will never pay more than 40% of her income on rent. Before getting her voucher, Reed says she was couch surfing. She says after losing a job and a couple of roommates, she just wasn't able to afford her rent anymore.
When I first went homeless, I thought I was going to be living with my dog in my truck. You know? But I've always had a roof over my head. You know, somebody took me in and always had food and everything, you know. But I think technically I was somewhere between a year and a half and 2 years when I did contact the vets.
It was on a doctor's visit that Reed's housing situation changed. She says during a checkup, she mentioned that she was homeless and couch surfing. Her doctor told her about the HUD-VASH program, and she says in 2 weeks, the VA had her in housing. The timing could not have been better. Reed says that July, she broke her leg.
And then it was only a few months later that I found out I had breast cancer.
Reed says she can't imagine what recovery would have been like if she had not gotten her voucher.
Because at least I had a home base, I could recuperate, I could go through my treatment, you know, with the breast cancer and surgery and stuff like that. So I really do think that if, you know, I hadn't have gotten that low-income housing, I don't know how I would have dealt with all this other stuff that was coming down the path, you know?
The HUD-VASH program is specifically for veterans experiencing homelessness. But housing choice vouchers themselves are a form of rental assistance available to most who make less than 50% of the median income in their county or city. Unlike Reed's experience, however, usually the wait time to get a housing voucher takes more than a few weeks. Most take months, if not years.
All right, so landlord information packet. This is kind of nice because we always like to try to see if we can get more.
About 2.5 miles away from Reed's home on a chilly December day, a group of about 30 people are sitting in a large window-lit room at the Housing Authority of the County of Butte in Chico. They're looking at a presentation projected on a screen, holding a thick packet of papers, and listening to their next steps. Everyone in this room is just getting off of the Housing Choice Voucher wait list. At the end of today's meeting, they'll have a voucher in hand. At that point, it will be up to them to find a place to rent, in 60 days or fewer. But receiving a voucher today does not necessarily mean each person in the room is guaranteed to use it. In fact, if this group ends up performing similarly to others who have come through these doors recently, many will not, as officials call it, lease up or find a landlord who will accept their voucher. Many variables come into play as to why only some in this room will use their voucher.
The ones who don't might be refused during the rental application process for anything from bad credit to a past criminal history to a previous eviction. A landlord could simply not want to rent to someone who wants to use a voucher, or it could just be hard for them to find a place.
We're seeing vacancy rates in the North State, actually across California, and North State and Chico and Butte are no different. We're seeing vacancy rates hovering around 1 to 1.5%, which is effectively a zero vacancy rate.
Ed Mayer is the executive director of the Housing Authority of County of Butte. He says a year ago, when his housing authority would take 100 applicants off of the wait list, they could pretty well predict that about a quarter of them would lease up and find a place to rent. He says now it's about 10% who do.
That's terrible. It's hardly an operational program. Most people who are leasing up in the program are already living in the unit where they can that can be subsidized, so they're not having to find a unit. If we give a voucher to someone who has to actually go out and find a unit in the community, they struggle. They struggle terribly.
Mayer says part of what's causing the lack of affordable rentals in the region is underproduction of housing. He says the other part is that the North State is a high-cost area.
Now, that may seem kind of crazy because we're not anywhere near as high cost as the coastal zones, Santa Cruz, Santa Barbara, et cetera, et cetera. But relative to incomes in the area, it is a high-cost area.
He says in both Chico and Oroville, 70% of renter families pay more than 30% of their household income toward rent and utilities.
And it gets so bad that, for example, in Oroville, 60% of the renter households in Oroville pay more than 50% of their income for rent and utilities.
But he says for some, the North State is seen as a relatively affordable place to live. Mayer says Butte County especially is a nexus for low-income disabled and seniors who are looking to leave the coast and Bay Area for a place where they can receive services and lived on a fixed supplemental security income.
So here at our housing authority, about two-thirds of those we serve are seniors and disabled. And very fortunately, we have tools to provide them with rental assistance so that they can live affordably, those we do serve. The sad part of all this, though, is that we can only serve, at this point, about 1 in 4 who comes to our doors.
He says the reason they can only serve 1 in 4 is because housing choice vouchers are not like entitlement programs, where if you qualify, you receive the benefit. Instead, even if you are eligible, you're subject to a wait list.
Typically, we see elderly and disabled waiting 4 to 6 years for housing.
How long someone will be on a wait list depends on the wait list. Some public housing agencies only open their wait list once a year. Others have their wait list open indefinitely. For example, Reading Housing Authority, that's jurisdiction is solely in the city of Reading, opens its wait list once a year, and it takes about a year to get in. At Plumas County Community Development Commission and Housing Authority, that has a jurisdiction spanning across Plumas, Lassen, Tehama, and Sierra counties, the wait list is open indefinitely.
Right now, it's a minimum wait of at least 2 years to be on the waiting list, just depending on preference points.
Emma Miravalli is the Section 8 receptionist at Plumas County Housing Authority. She's the person who runs the wait list. She says their housing authority has 4 different preference points. If the person on the waiting list is working, disabled, or elderly, a resident of one of the 4 counties the housing authority covers, a veteran, or displaced, then they'll get off the wait list quicker.
I pull from the waiting list at least once a month, at least 50 people. And then I get at least 50 to 100 more applications in each month as well. So it kind of, they kind of replace themselves.
Miravalli says the current wait list has about 2,000 to 4,000 people on it, with somewhere between 2,000 to 3,000 of them being residents of the area. Those who have applied from elsewhere want to do something called port. While they will have to move to one of the 4 counties Plumas County Housing Authority covers to receive their voucher, after they have lived in that place for a year, they'll be able to take their voucher with them if they want to move somewhere else. Like Mayer, Miravalli says many people who receive a voucher will struggle to use it if they need to find a new place to rent. She says in Quincy there are many reasons for this, including high rents, people not being able to find units that fit the size of their family, or the fact that there is a community college in the city.
A lot of kids come in and swoop up the housing, and then kind of it opens back up around May, June.
But the main issue that people run into in all of the areas that Plumas County Housing Authority covers is
the availability.
Jackie Trotter is the Section 8 coordinator and supervisor at Plumas County Housing Authority. She says affordable housing is limited in the entire area her housing authority covers.
Since it is limited, the landlords don't necessarily have to take Section 8 and government subsidy, so they're renting more on the open market. rather than taking Section 8 vouchers. So it's definitely an issue in all of our counties.
She says it's something she's noticed since the housing market went down.
What I saw happen was people started renting, and that really took up a lot of the rentals in several of the areas because we run Lassen, Sierra, Plumas, and Tehama County.
Trotter says since that time, the waiting list has continued to grow. But some say the waiting list has always been long. Addie Openshaw says she's been using a housing choice voucher issued by Plumas County Housing Authority for about 13 years. She lives in East Quincy and says she remembers the first time she signed on, it took a while to find a place to rent.
The availability was very, very low.
She says since then her family has grown and that both she and her husband have gotten better jobs. She says she works seasonally at a local Frosty stand in town. When she does, they sometimes have to kick their voucher.
Which is great for us because we don't always need to lean on housing. And that's what it's there for.
Openshaw says her current three-bedroom unit is $950. With both she and her husband currently working, they pay a little over $700 in rent. But she says when she did not have that seasonal job, their voucher covered half. She says during those times, she doesn't know what she'd do without the help.
Times were just so hard. I don't know what I would do without it. It's really nice to fall back on. And if I can say anything, put yourself on the list and keep up on it when they give you callbacks.
According to both Trotter and Mayer, keeping up with the wait list is a big issue. Many people don't keep their information current or get paperwork back. In fact, a huge chunk of people on both their wait lists who are invited to get a voucher don't show up. What happened to them?
What happened to them is that they've moved on.
Mayer says while his housing authority tells people to keep in touch, many on the wait list are just moving too quickly.
They're trying to survive. And whether they're couch surfing, living with relatives, living with friends, bouncing around from house to house, it's very difficult for them in their survival mode to remember to call the housing authority to tell us where they are. So we lose 85% of those who apply before we even get those who did in the door.
Mayer says the Housing Choice Voucher Program is limited based on congressional funding, which has seen cuts in recent years and could see more. He says his observation is that society has not fully made a commitment to housing issues in a holistic fashion, and that he feels like it's going backward at exactly the time it should be moving in the other direction.
Homelessness and the rise of homelessness in the last 30 years, I think, really is a defining issue of our times because it defines our civilization, it defines our capacities, defines our priorities, and it, I think, defines us as a civilization. Are we civilized or are we not? And if civilization is to be judged by how we work with our seniors and our disabled and our children, I'm afraid we may not be very civilized right now, given our inability to meet the needs of these vulnerable populations.
For North State Public Radio News, I'm Sarah Bohannon.
Work is often a reason a person leaves their home in search of a new one. In the North State, many come to the area to work in agriculture. It's a major industry in a number of counties in the region. In Yuba, Sutter, Glenn, Colusa, and Butte counties, agriculture brings in millions of dollars each year, as well as thousands of migrant and seasonal workers. But while the industry is a huge boon for the North State's economy, it often struggles to sustain those helping to bring in the harvest.
Rosa Avila de Vargas first met her husband Jesus while visiting her parents' hometown in Mexico. At the time, her family was living in California, but would return to Mexico to see relatives. She and Jesus became close during that time and eventually started dating. They wanted to get married, but they weren't sure how, because they were citizens of two different countries.
It was kind of hard at first because I was like, how is this going to work out? You're over here, I'm over there. How's this going to happen? And my mom told me something really, like, important that I'll never forget. She's like, if you really love someone, you know, you will find a way to get him here.
Rosa took her mom's advice, and the couple married in Mexico. She petitioned for Jesus to move to the States with her. Their application was approved within 8 months, and he found a job pruning trees and doing general labor on an orchard in Orland. It seemed things were going well, so they decided to have a child together. But it soon became apparent that Jesus' job was not as reliable as they had thought. Sometimes he'd show up to work, only to be sent home and without any pay.
When it's hot, when it's above 101, they send them home. When it's raining, they send them home, or if it starts raining. If it's too wet for them to work, they send them home too.
Farm work is also seasonal, and if there's nothing on the farm that needs to be done, the workers are laid off. Several months into Rose's pregnancy, that's what happened to Jesus. During this time, the couple lived in an apartment complex off Nord Avenue in Chico. The layoff left them without enough money for the rent that month, so they had to get emergency monetary help for their housing. A nonprofit called California Human Development gave them a grant. They have an office in Chico, but you can only receive the aid once. It took Jesus nearly a year to get a new job, and Rosa said, thankfully, it was perfect timing. She had just given birth to their daughter.
The day after she was born, they told him he was hired, so that was kind of good because, you know, we're like, oh, you're our good luck charm because you were just brought to this world, and we were so scared to not be, you know, efficient parents to provide for you.
The new job was on another orchard in Orland, where he was hired to do similar work as before. It paid $10.50 an hour. Rosa really wanted to move out of the apartment they were in, but they couldn't afford to. She said the upstairs neighbors had loud parties, and the downstairs neighbors smoked pot, which circulated through her heater and into her apartment. She says it gave her headaches, and there were other problems, too.
The cops were there every other day, so it's, like, crazy. I mean, it's stressful for an adult to witness it. Imagine a child, you know, I don't want her to see that.
Rosa ended up finding an apartment complex that offers subsidized rent for farm workers. It's called La Vista Verde, and it's an average-looking apartment, walking distance from Bidwell Park, with a playground and a community center. In order to qualify to live there, the head of the household has to make $5,752 or more each year through farm work. Rosa said she spent a year on the waiting list before her family could move in. The complex is run through the nonprofit called Community Housing Improvement Program, or CHIP. The organization owns a number of complexes that are reserved specifically for farm workers. There's one in Hamilton City, one in Orland, and the one where Rosa lives, La Vista Verde, in Chico. The rent in these complexes is based on annual income and ranges from $266 to $689 per month. The funding comes from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which offers both public and nonprofit organizations grants to build housing for farm workers. Like CHIP, Butte County also receives USDA funding for this type of housing and operates a 130-unit property in Gridley. Rosa said that CHIP's complex felt far safer than their first apartment off Nord. The community is tight-knit and neighbors keep an eye out for each other. Chico State students come once a week to play with the kids. There's a Zumba teacher that hosts classes in the community center. Overall, she liked the place, but she said it didn't come without its problems.
This is going to sound funny, but they have, like, a roach problem. Like, a lot of roaches are there. The carpet, the flooring, the cabinets are not the best.
It would have been tolerable for her alone, but she didn't want to raise her daughter, now a toddler, in that apartment.
I don't want her to put a roach in her mouth one day, like, oh, that looks good, and just put it in her mouth. I mean, it's really disgusting, and that was the hardest part.
Tina Rose was a supervisor for that property until June of this year. She says she doesn't remember there being a roach problem and that they have pest control for all of their sites. She says it would be the tenant's responsibility to report the issue. Rosa says her apartment was sprayed, but the roaches were still a problem. Rosa stayed in La Vista Verde for 2 years. Through the staff there, she learned of CHIP's self-help program. It allows first-time homeowners who make below 80% of the median income to buy a home with no down payment. The mortgage is decided on a case-by-case basis and is based on income. CHIP has facilitated this program on properties in Butte, Tehama, Shasta, Sutter, Glynn, Lassen, Yuba, and Colusa counties. Participants have to commit 30 hours a week for at least 10 months to help build their home. Rosa and her family participated in this program and moved into their new CHIP home this November. Rosa says there's a backyard and an extra room for her parents, who are going to move in with them soon. It's a happy ending, after a number of difficult years.
I never even thought it was possible. I just said, oh gosh, well, I guess we're going to rent our whole lives.
But Rose's family is an exception to the rule. She has a degree in early childhood education and teaches preschool, so the family doesn't have to survive solely on a farm worker's wages, as many other farm worker families do. The National Agricultural Workers Survey estimates that 25% of farm worker families earn below the federal poverty line. That number also doesn't take into account any dependents living in another country. Rosa says she's heard stories from her husband about farm workers living in dorms provided by their employers. In the dorms, she says she's heard that they sleep 10 to 1 room. The Department of Housing and Community Development is responsible for inspecting employer-run farm worker housing here in California. In 2016, the department inspected half of the region's 31 privately run facilities. They found a total of 131 violations. Inspections for the complex where Rosa lived are done by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. We are currently waiting on a Freedom of Information Act request for more information about any violations on their properties. For some farm workers, quality of housing isn't their biggest concern. Rosa says that one of their family friends is currently homeless and has been living out of his car for almost a year now.
My family's moving in, so we won't have any room. So it's like we want to help, and my hands are tied. I don't know how to help him out.
To receive subsidized farm worker housing, the primary occupant has to provide proof of legal residency, or at least be in the process of obtaining it. So, for those who are undocumented, this type of housing often isn't an option. 48% of farm workers who participated in the National Agricultural Workers Survey in 2013 said that they were undocumented. Rachel Riggs, with CHIP, says they turn a lot of families away because they aren't legal U.S. residents or citizens. Rosa says she feels her family is fortunate and wants her daughter to know this too.
That's why I tell my daughter every day in the morning, she's like, I'm cold, I don't want to get up to go to school. And I'm like, you need to think about this, mija. Like, there's a lot of people that don't have a place to live. They're living in the streets, and they are cold. They're colder than you are.
I'm Adia White for North State Public Radio.
You've heard about the current housing and rental market in our region, and from many who are struggling to keep themselves sheltered. Now we turn to you. As we move into 2018, we of the NSPR News team would like to bring you more long-form, in-depth reports about regional issues. But before we do, we'd like your opinion. Would you like to hear more reporting like this special feature? What issues would you like us to dig into? Let us know by emailing us at nsprnews@csuchico.edu. That's nsprnews@csuchico.edu. Or leave us a voicemail at 433-4887. That's 433-4887. This has been an hour-long special on NSPR about affordable housing in the North State. Stories were reported by Mark Albert, Nolan Ford, Adia White, and Sarah Bohannon. Music is One Step Forward by Direct. For North State Public Radio News, I'm Sarah Bohannon.